All right, Dave Plyer back with you here on 720 WGN. So it's a dirty job, but somebody has to do it. And TV's Mike Rowe is a champion of essential workers and has rolled up his sleeves once again to celebrate the next generation of hardworking men and women who have made civilized life possible. An all-new season of the fan-favorite series Dirty Jobs has launched, and it's airing Sundays at 7 Central on Discovery and streaming on Discovery+. Not to mention he's been the voice of Deadliest Catch for 17 seasons and so much more. He does amazing work with his foundation, Mike Rowe Works. Good God, you're a busy guy. Happy New Year, Mike.
Just when I thought I was out, they tucked me back in.
Yeah, they did. They did. Well, I was going to say, like so many, my kids and I have watched the original Dirty Jobs series into the ground, pretty much. And earlier this month, you launched an all-new season, and very excited you did this. And from the very first episode that I saw, you literally picked up where you left off. I just love it.
Well, I didn't see much point in changing the show. I mean, the country has changed. I've changed a little. I mean, I'm older than I've ever been. But the but the show itself, yeah, you know, it worked from the very beginning. And I think part of its appeal was the fact that parents could watch it with their kids and kids could watch it with their parents. There was something in it for everybody. But we really did take very seriously the idea of a reality show. We didn't, we never cast anybody. We never did any pre-production. We never did any rehearsing. We actually never did a second take. It was always meant to be an honest, transparent look at a day's work through the eyes of an apprentice. And I swore I'd never do another one after 2012. We'd finished our 300th job.
Wow.
And been to all 50 states. But after the lockdowns, after this craziness, you know, a lot of people wanted to talk about essential work. So,
agree.
Yeah, we picked up where we left off.
Agree. Absolutely agree. And you've been a champion of that for as long as I've known you. And I will, but I will say, you know, for being off air for 10 years, and being off the air for 10 years without a new episode, literally it just seemed like, oh yeah, it's a new season. Like, it just didn't even dawn on me that it hasn't been on in a decade because I keep watching it over and over. But I just love what you did. And if folks, if you can catch up on what you missed already, streaming on Discovery Plus, your debut episode was all focused on hard workers responsible for building America's infrastructure. And you featured a bridge that was built with a very tight timeline. Like, crazy.
Well, we're down in Tampa. Yeah, I mean, it was bananas. You know, these guys have worked through the lockdowns, through the pandemic. They never stopped. And rod busting was the focus of the episode. And it's probably the toughest job in construction and one of the few that I didn't get a chance to try the first time around. But these are the guys that take the rebar and fabricate it and shape it into these giant skeletons that form the infrastructure or the architecture, really, for roads and bridges. And then, of course, when they're done, I mean, it's beautiful and amazing. And then the concrete guys come in and cover everything up with cement, and nobody ever sees their work.
Right.
So,
right.
I thought they'd be good to highlight.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And the second episode features a jelly baller and an epoxy installer.
Yeah, we found a group of guys down in Darien, Georgia, fourth generation fishermen. They were shrimpers primarily, but they sort of pivoted during the pandemic and started fishing for these things called cannonball jellyfish, which are a delicacy over in the Far East. But they just scoop up these basketball-sized round spheres of snot and process them. And ship them around the world. It's an incredible thing. These jelly balls—they don't—they don't taste like anything, but they're a food additive. So if you add a pound of jelly balls to a pound of hamburger, you wind up with 2 pounds of hamburger.
Wow! Wow!
So, you know, it's a very strange episode, but I don't want to overstate it. But we might have cured world hunger.
I like that. I like that. Well, here's the thing. You just said someone pivoted during the pandemic to a new job. I can't tell you how many people I know that really did reinvent themselves during this whole thing and maybe took advantage of some opportunities that were out there or just wanted to do something different, right?
Well, adapt or die. You know, pivot or perish. In relative terms, everybody had to do some version of that dance if they wanted to keep busy over the last 2 years. You know, I mean, even me and my ridiculous business, I remember, you know, we locked down in March of 2020. Right. And by the end of April, I was on the air with Discovery doing the first primetime Zoom show of the whole crucible. I mean, not that I want to do any more of them, but I was so grateful for a chance to, you know, keep working and keep my people employed. And so I think some of the most interesting people out in the world today are the people who found a way to keep the lights on during the last couple of years. And those are the people we feature on the show.
But also, people wanted fresh content. I mean, things were shut down. I mean, you're watching reruns of everything, unless you wanted to watch the news 24/7, which is just mind-boggling. It's great to have that new content out there.
Yeah, I don't recommend a 24/7 diet of the news or your news feed. You know, that's so much of, I think, what weighed people down over the last couple years has been a constant daily diet of all the trouble in the world. Life went on. Yeah. You know, and it's we're a product of what we look at, it's honestly. True. And I'm afraid we spent a lot of time looking at some pretty depressing stuff over the last year.
We're talking to TV's Mike Rowe about the comeback season of Discovery Channel's Dirty Jobs. And there's more with him after the news next on 720 WGN. Dave Plyer back with you on 720 WGN. We're talking to TV's Mike Rowe about the comeback season of Discovery Channel's Dirty Jobs. You know, Mike, a little history here. You, in the early days, and I'm leading up to how Dirty Jobs even came about, you hosted a bunch of local shows. One of them was called Evening Magazine, where you did a little segment called Somebody's Got to Do It, and you started pitching this out, right?
I shot a segment in the sewers of San Francisco with a sewer inspector and put it on this little show called Evening Magazine, and half the audience was horrified. You know, they were sitting down. This is in San Francisco.
Yeah.
These poor people are sitting down to eat their meatloaf, you know, and watch some heart-tugging story about a three-legged dog in Marin overcoming canine kidney failure. Mm-hmm. And they get me crawling through a sewer. Well, you know, some people were appalled, but the people who loved it, they all said a version of the same thing. They all wrote in and they said, man, you think that's dirty? You ought to meet my brother, my cousin, my uncle, my mom, my dad. Wait till you see what they do. And that convinced me that there was an opportunity to do a show about work that hadn't been done before, or at least to shoot a show in a way that hadn't been shot before. And it was a tough sell. Wasn't funny enough for Comedy Central. It was too funny for PBS. Wasn't gross enough for ABC. Too gross for Fox, and on and on. But the Discovery Channel said, yeah, let's give it a shot. And what began as a talk show in a sewer turned in to this giant rumination on work and the ever-changing definition of a good job and what exactly people will do to make a buck in these United States.
Well, it was educational for me and for my family, too, because, I mean, I didn't even know half these jobs existed, or I didn't appreciate what they did. I just assumed, okay, got done. I don't know who did it. I don't know how they got there. And you really kind of showed that journey.
Well, and that's why we're back, honestly. You know, 2012 was the last episode that we shot. But to your point, the show never went away. And people were surprised to hear that we were coming back because they thought we never left.
Yeah.
But the truth is, we were down for 10 years and we came back because essential work wound up in the headlines again. And my foundation is now 14 years old. And I just thought it would be a great opportunity to give me a platform to talk more about work ethic scholarships and some of the opportunities that exist in our country for people who want to learn a skill that's actually in demand.
No question.
So, you know, the headlines caught up with my little show again and made it relevant in ways that the network never imagined it would be.
Well, in that first season, you did like 6 episodes, and then the second one, I think you did like 40 or 45, and I thought to myself, oh, man, you just kicked that into gear. How did you even start finding these places? Like, was it viewers or some of these people doing these jobs sending in, hey, this is what I do for a living, come out here and see me, or were you doing a lot of the research? Like, how did it all come together?
Well, it really started with a phone call from my mother. Mm. I was at CBS hosting that show, Evening Magazine, and she called to tell me that you know, my granddad was 90. He just had a birthday. This is the guy who Dirty Jobs was dedicated to. This is the guy who could build a house without a blueprint, who I grew up next to. And she said to me, Mike, you know, your pop's not going to be around forever. Wouldn't it be great if he could turn on the TV before he died and see you doing something that looked like work?
Jesus. Wow, that's a motivator. So
that's what drove me into the sewer the next day to shoot that segment. And once the show got picked up, I had a list of about 20 jobs that I thought my grandfather would recognize as work. And we shot all of them. And then after that, the show, they just kept ordering more and more. So, you know, I went online and said, look, if you guys, talking to the fans, I said, if you guys have an idea, speak up now, because I'm tapped out. And that's really what happened, Dave. The show was hijacked by the fans. They began to program it. They ultimately hosted it as well. I was just a guest.
Yeah.
And
okay.
In that model, yeah, we kept it on its feet for 300. And God knows how many more we'll do. We'll see.
Talking to TV's Mike Rowe about the comeback season of Discovery Channel's Dirty Jobs. And there's more with him. Talking to TV's Mike Rowe about the comeback season of Discovery Channel's Dirty Jobs. I have a question for you unrelated to this, but late last year, you landed your first hit on the Billboard charts. Number one on Billboard's digital song sales charts. You beat out Adele, Elton John, and Dua Lipa. Look at you, man.
It's crazy. It was a song called Santa's Got a Dirty Job. And I was being interviewed by John Rich from Big and Rich, country music star. Mm-hmm. And we were having a few laughs, and we were trading songs. He said, Mike Rowe, you know what? You can carry two. We ought to do an album or something. And I said, yeah, I guess we could do like a Dirty Christmas Carol album. And he said, you know who's got a dirty job? Santa Claus got a dirty job. He went into a bathroom during a commercial break, came back with the chorus.
Get out of here.
Played it for me on his own.
Wow.
I swear to God. We did this thing, like 2 days later, we went into the studio. He called the Oak Ridge Boys. They came in, and we recorded this song down in Nashville.
Wow.
And I said, look, this is your world. I don't know anything about this world, but we ought to give the money we raised from this thing to, you know, he's got a foundation called Folds of Honor, and I got MicroWorks. And I said, let's just split it. And he said, deal. And so I made the rounds. We started playing the song. And 3 days later, it was the number one downloaded song in the world.
It's amazing. Absolutely.
Unbelievable.
But people don't really know, though. I mean, you really started in the early, early days. You were an opera singer, dude, right?
Yeah. I got I kind of faked my way into the Baltimore Opera so I could get my union card, you know, so I could work in TV. It's a crazy story, but I wound up, you know, the music was better than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
And the girls were, you know, amazing and all over the place. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm a 22-year-old kid dressed up like a pirate singing, you know, Verdi at the top of my lungs with a bunch of co-eds. I stayed for 8 years.
So this pandemic, it just won't go away. You know, it's certainly hurt American workers and businesses throughout the country. It continues to. But, you know, it's sad because throughout this whole thing, we're talking about essential workers and non-essential workers. There's really no such thing as a non-essential worker. Mm-hmm. It almost says unimportant, you know, worth nothing in the big picture of American life, right?
Well, it's a terrible thing what the language can do by accident. You know, it's fine to celebrate essential work, but if at the same time you're telling 40 million people they're non-essential, you're going to tell them to sit home. Well, there's going to be some unintended consequences from that. And I think we saw that over the lockdowns. Everybody's essential to somebody. You know, even if it's just to themselves.
Right.
And work matters in ways that go so far beyond a transactional paycheck. This is our identity. This is what we do for meaning. And so, again, when those kinds of things wind up in the headlines, for whatever reason, people start looking around to see what people like me think, simply because I hosted a show about work for 20 years.
Right, right.
So, you know, that's why my foundation matters more today than it ever has to me. And that's why the show is back. And that's why you kind of have to do everything, Dave. I mean, if you want to make a living in this ridiculous business, you know, you got to do dirty jobs. You got to do a hit song. You got to write a book. You got to do a podcast.
A hit song.
You know, you got to do it all.
You're right. You're right.
You know, you don't get to pick what's going to work. So you got to throw as much mud as you can and see what sticks.
So that is a great mission and a great strategy. But now we're in the middle of this big quit. Record 4.5 million workers quit their jobs in November. Job openings are like at 10 or 11 million. And I know some of it came from restaurant and healthcare workers. But
the only way to explain that is to look at it in terms of a disconnect with something. And I think the thing we've become disconnected from is the definition of a good job. You know, we can control that. And for whatever reason, we've got a workforce that's really out of balance now. And the 11 million positions that you're talking about consist primarily of a lot of jobs that don't require a four-year degree. Problem is, we're still telling kids, by and large, that the best path for the most people is a four-year degree, which happens to be the most expensive path. So we're creating a real problem in education. It's kind of like when you talk about an essential worker, that presupposes that we have lots of non-essential workers. And when you talk about higher education, then that presupposes the idea that all other forms are lower or alternative. And that's a problem, because if you don't aspire to at least explore a career that might involve a trade school or a community college instead of a four-year school, well, then you just set the table in a really lopsided way. And I'm afraid that's what we've done. We have $1.7 trillion in student loans on the books right now that you and I are actually on the hook for. Mm-hmm. And we have 11 million great jobs that for whatever reason people aren't excited about. So that's what my foundation tries to do. We try and make a more persuasive case for the jobs that are open, and we award work ethic scholarships to people who want to learn a skill that's actually in demand. And you mentioned stereotypes and stigmas. The most important thing we can do is debunk all of the myths and misperceptions that keep people from pursuing these trades. And I do it by introducing the country to people like Chloe Hudson, who applied for a work ethic scholarship 4 years ago, got a welding certification, and now makes $130,000 a year welding at Joe Gibbs Aerospace. That kid should be on a billboard.
Yeah, no question. You always put your money where your mouth is in everything that you do, and you do great work, my friend. Honestly, you're an inspiration.
I appreciate it. You know what? It's still fun, and there's no secret sauce to this. Right. Sometimes it's a missionary position. Sometimes it's a mercenary position. Both positions are underrated, by the way. But yeah. Look, you've got to make a living, but you ought to give something back to if you can. And that's been my MO from day one.
It has. Watch the brand new season of Dirty Jobs airing Sundays at 7 Central on Discovery and streaming on Discovery Plus. And for more on Mike's foundation, visit MikeRowWorks.com. Mike, always, always a pleasure, and happy New Year to you, my friend.
Dave, happy New Year to you and all your listeners. Be well.
Thank you, sir. All right, top stories from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom are next here on 720 WGN.